Off the Ball.
Get all the best bits at newstalk.com/off the ball.
Newstalk 106 to 108.
Robbie Savage, does that stir the emotions for you?
Ah, the best anthem in the world, no question about that. Unfortunately for me, Joe, only got to hear it 39 times because of my well-publicised poll. That was one of the managers. So, yeah, one of the best anthems in the world.
Well, your well-publicised falling out with John Toshack, I mean, you'll probably find this a bit odd, but you're pretty famous on this show in that... Every single night we have a jingle for our football show, and the famous interview you did with Leighton James about the situation is very much a part of it. Here's just the raw clip, not the jingle, but the actual interview itself, where Toshack's come on board, you're not in the first squad or two, and you retire from international football, and then you're willing to come back, and you go on radio with Leighton James, formerly a Welsh player, and debate your efforts to try and come back for Wales under Toshack.
And what happened? The toys came out of your pram, right, I retire. And then you turned around a few months later... When common sense... Not to him personally, you haven't.
So how can you get... How can a modern-day manager, in this day and age, not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
Oh,
why should he? Hang on a minute. You want to get hold of John Toshack, do you?
Yeah, I've tried.
Do you want to get hold of John Toshack?
I've tried.
Right, who sits across the dressing room from you every single day?
Craig Bellamy spoke to him.
I'm not interested in Craig Bellamy speaking. Why can't you get a number off Craig Bellamy? It's not rocket science.
What number?
Have you written to him?
Right. I've written to him.
Yes, I
know. I've seen him in school.
It's a simple question. Well, you just said you're
just... Oi,
don't cut me off.
Face-to-face.
Just suggested something then.
Why don't
you get in your car and drive down there then?
I'm prepared to do anything I can to play for my country again.
Do it then.
Why the hell didn't you write to him?
I know, ridiculous, isn't it? Joe, to be fair, that was a clip that started me off in media, and you know, if I carry on doing like I'm doing, mate, I might win the Irish Radio Sports Presenter of the Year like you have in the last 3 years.
It's a big award, that, Robbie, I tell you.
Big award, that, yeah, Kevin. Yeah, big award. Well done, Joe. I heard about that.
Stop it now. I presume you must have got in touch with Toshack eventually, though, no?
No, believe it or not, no. I think that was the last time I didn't even speak to him. But, you know, listen, you know, it was, I was very hasty and, you know, I just couldn't understand at the time when I was captaining Blackburn Rovers in the Premier League. We were playing in Europe and, you know, there was players who were playing lower leagues who were getting the squad ahead of me because, you know, the manager obviously wanted to go a different way. But I actually received a call in the car park of Blackburn Rovers off the manager and said, he wasn't going to pick me for the next two or three games. So I basically was a bit hasty and retired. You know, I was wrong, really. I should have, you know, not retired and said nothing and just let my performances for Blackburn, you know, make me in the squad. But in the end, Joe, I played till I was 37 and probably, you know, pulling out of the Wales squad. And the Wales squad at the time wasn't great. And, you know, only until Gary Speed and now Chris Comer in charge, they decided to do much better.
Did Toshack give you a reason when he rings you in the car park for leaving you out?
Just what said he wanted to try something else. I think it was Carl Fletcher and Carl Robinson who were in the squad ahead of me. And I think, I might be correct if I'm wrong, I think Carl Robinson was at Wolves and I think Carl Fletcher might have been at Plymouth. I'm not sure. Sorry about the dog barking. There's a dog on my telly and my little French bulldog. If a dog comes on the telly, barks it. So you can hear the dog. I apologise.
You're right. Before we leave that famous interview, there does come a point where you get a bit sick of Leighton James and just start giving him a piece of your mind back.
You weren't a bad player. You weren't the greatest player in the world.
I never professed to be.
You weren't the greatest player in the world. You were technically right, but you weren't the best tackler. You wouldn't go for 50-50s as far as my father remembers.
Well, I'll tell you something,
I'm telling
son.
I'll tell you that now. If I play against you these days, oh, dear, dear.
You wouldn't catch me, son.
You wouldn't get buzzed.
No,
come on, lads.
And on you went like that for another 5 minutes.
You know, listening back to it, there's some magical moments in my broadcasting career, and that was certainly one of them. And And if nobody's heard, there was another one with seven pairs of trainers, which on my radio show on 5 Live, 606, there was a grave. You Google seven pairs of trainers, that was another great one.
Is this that you bought seven pairs of trainers in a shop and asked the kid to carry them out?
Well, it was absolute nonsense. It was absolute nonsense. When you work in radio, you know, the listeners probably would know this, but you'll have a producer in your ear. And you have to be careful of calling somebody a liar on air because obviously it's liable. And,
yeah.
You know, I had my producer in my ear saying, you can't call him a liar. So I was speaking to her saying, no, he's a liar. Also speaking to the guy saying, you're a liar. Because I knew I was right. I knew that it was completely made up. And, you know, seven pairs of chains made a little boy cut him at the shop. It's absolute nonsense.
It's a great line. No, but I just want to just to finish off probably on the Wales thing with Tosha. But you speak there, and it's when I've ever spoken to you, you speak with great pride about Wales. I've heard your commentaries when you've been commentating on the Wales games. Is there you answered the question there with saying that tinge of regret, but would you have done it any differently? Would you have changed it now when you're a little bit more mature as you've got older?
Yeah, of course it would be. Yeah, of course. You know, because I know, you know, 50 caps and, you know, if I'd have been playing for the Republic of Ireland, Kevin, I'd probably go back to 200 because you got 120. So, you know, it's...
I've already told you wouldn't have got an R team, Rob. You've no chance.
You know, yeah, Kev, but you're right, mate. I would have wished to have got to 50 caps, you know, even to 70, 80 and get up there with some of the greats, because you're seeing what, you know, the likes of Chris Gunter, who's done brilliantly well for Wales, and now he could, you know, Chris Gunter could become the record caps holder for an outfield play, you know, if he carries on. He's still only young, well, was he 26, 27, but, you know, when I'm seeing players with 50 caps, who I believe, you know, I won't say better than, but, you know, probably played a lot more Premier League games than some. When I see the 50-cap milestone and that special cap you get for 50, and I haven't got one, of course it hurts. And, of course, Kev, you know me, and, you know, I was hasty, and of course I regret it. But, you know, if I ever carried on and played 50, 60 times in my country, perhaps I wouldn't have played as many Premier League games, so, yeah. You know, it swings around about.
You made your debut in 1995. I'm curious to get a feel for the atmosphere in the Welsh squads, because certainly the Irish squads at that time, the players loved coming over, they got to go out in Dublin, they got to have a few drinks. Mm. It was more like a club team, actually, than an international team, and the players often preferred playing for Ireland than even their clubs. What was the Welsh setup like?
I would say it was very, very, very similar. You know, I went into a squad when I was a crew, and there was people like, you know, I remember my first meeting up with the squad, all the players were in the bar, and I walked in and there was Mark Hughes, Ian Rush, Dean Saunders, Neville Southall, Gary Speed, and I'm thinking, wow, I'm this little, you know, this little lad from crew, and these people are legends. And, you know, it was a very similar mentality that, you know, I remember, you know, as things moved on, and you couldn't wait to finish your game on the weekend. You jump in your car, you get to Cardiff as quickly as you could, so you could have 2 or 3 days out with.
Yeah.
And it was brilliant. The mentality was, you know, we all enjoyed each other's company. We all got on well. And you would say now that looking at this Chris Coleman squad, you know, I'm not sure. I don't think there will be a drinking mentality at all when they're away. I think, if I'm led to believe, I could be wrong, but they don't drink at all when they're away. But the way they get on, you know, obviously in the Euros, they had a few beers after a couple of wins, but I think building up to games in the qualifiers, I think there's a no drinking regime, which is probably the right thing to do. But, you know, you see how they all get on. When they eat together, they have fun in games. You know, it's just incredible, incredible spirit they've got, almost like a club side.
Mm.
Rob, you mentioned there when you got in and the names that were around. I had a very similar sort of situation myself when I got in 97. The likes of Roy Keane, the likes of Andy Townsend, Ray Houghton, and Steve Staunton. All these players that ultimate legends for what they'd achieved at international level, and all of a sudden I was thrust into this environment. I struggled at first to cope day-to-day training, not necessarily, you know, maybe around the games as such. I mean, although I did actually struggle in the first couple of games that I played. But how did you cope when you first got in training day to day with those players?
Well, it was very difficult because, you know, when you're a crew, and I think it was the third division as it was, and was it League Two? I can't. What was it? 1997.
It was Division Two at the time.
Division Two, yes,
yeah.
So Division Two. You know, and the keep ball's probably not as good. And when you're in the circle, so you know if there's eight on the outside and you, two of you, you've got to try and get the ball back. You know, every time the ball come to me, I was petrified because if you give it away, you've got the likes of, you know, Rush, Saunders, you know, legends. Look at this. Probably thinking to themselves, what's he doing here? He plays for Crewe. Although they didn't think that, in my mind, I was thinking, they must be thinking, what on earth have we got here? Do you know what I mean? And it was very hard to come to terms with it a little bit because I just felt in awe of these people and the lad from Crewe playing in Division 2 with guys for Manchester United, Liverpool, all these, you know, all these legends. It was very hard at first.
To round off your Welsh career, you know, so you join all those legends who don't make a major tournament, and right up until, you know, 2004, just before Toshak comes in, Wales make the playoffs for Euro 04 and lose to Russia. And we were even looking at, you know, that team that got a brilliant result away to Italy one night. You know, across the midfield, you've got yourself, you've got Speed, you've got Giggs, you've got Simon Davies, who's a good player. You've got John Hartson up front. You've got Craig Bellamy up front. Like, serious, serious talent. Why did Wales fall short? What was missing, do you feel?
Well, we had such a good campaign that we, as you rightly said, Joe, we beat Italy, and that was 2-1. And I think we won the first four games in the group. And then, you know, I think I can't remember who we lost to, but then we went to Italy and we got beat 4-0. And then we just, I don't know what, because nothing changed. We all got on well. We all kept playing the same way because it was a 4-3-3 formation. We had, you know, John Hartson as the number nine, and we had Bellamy one side, Giggs the other. So the front three there, you know, at the time were unbelievable. Yeah. Gary Speed was left back because it was myself, Simon Davis, and Mark Pembridge in the middle of the park. And I think it was one of the first times that that Wales team was all Premier League players, which is something that in the past gone by, Wales have always had either a good front line, a good midfield, or a good, you know, back four. But on that occasion, you would say it was strong all over the park. And you know, we went to Moscow and we got a great 0-0, and then we brought them back to the Millennium, 75,000, and we just didn't perform. And it's one of the biggest regrets I've got, especially when you're seeing the Wales team now in that Euros getting the semi-finals, the way they performed and the way the country got behind them, you know, the films being made about them. It's just a remarkable story.
Kev mentioned Roy Keane there. Do you wish that you didn't have WhatsApp as your voicemail message?
Do you know what? Do I regret it? Well, you know, I would love to have met Roy Keane on that occasion because, you know, suddenly it was Sunderland Derby and I was supposed to be meeting Roy Keane in a hotel near Manchester because that's where we both lived. And, you know, he wanted somebody with a character, somebody that could galvanise the dressing room, and I would have been the perfect thing for him. And you know,
so he went somewhere else. He went somewhere else looking for this character. Then Rob, did he? Yeah.
That's why I think he went for somebody else. But when he got my mobile, and it was at the time when that famous advert was on the telly, and it was WhatsApp. And obviously, when he phoned and must have got that message, he must have thought, "What the am I doing here?"
Yeah.
Yeah, Rob, the one thing as well we're looking at as well for your career. Of course, you played in the class of '92. So many great players. And the one thing Joe pointed out today as well, the players that you spoke about from that class, the Keith Gillespies, was it Nicky Butt as well? They're the two perhaps standout players, not necessarily Scholes and Beckham from that side. So what was revolving around that time, and why in particular those two that you thought that were the standout players from that side?
Well, Nicky Butt and Keith Gillespie, I rumour Keith Gillespie, and I think the reason why that class of 92 done so well, Kevin, is because, you know, a lot of the boys were in digs, and it was at a time where, you know, you'd finished training, you know, you went through the YTS scheme as it was at the time, and we'd finished training. We'd be bored when you go back to the digs, so the majority of us would go back to the training ground and then train with the School of Excellences in the indoor thing. And, you know, the practice, every day was practicing. You'd see David Beckham hitting free kicks. You'd see, you know, Keith Gillespie, you know, taking people on. It was just practice and practice and practice. All, you know, and at that time, Kevin, as well, you'll know that we done jobs. So you were grounded. You'd be cleaning the toilets, the showers. You'd be cleaning people's boots. And we just had this togetherness and this team spirit. And you could see that the lads, you know, Keith Gillespie, you know, the way he went past players, Nicky Butt, his aggression in the middle of the park. You know, you could even see with David Beckham, although, you know, he struggled to get into the Class 92 team for a while, but his breakthrough was, I think he scored a 35-yard against Crystal Palace in the final, the first leg away from home. And, you know, since then he never looked back. But Scorsese, you know, because of his size, you know, he struggled at first, but then went on to be one of the best ever Premier League midfielders.
And were you starting?
I start. You know, the funny story is, my life's been quite sad, really, in terms of the big occasions I've been left out. So the Class 92, the final, the second leg. You know, I played in every game, and then the second leg at Old Trafford, you know, I got left out. Ryan Giggs.
But you were a striker, though, Rob, weren't you?
I were a striker. I was a striker. So that is one regret as well. You know, I've got many regrets, but I was a centre-forward, and, you know, I was never going to be a centre-forward. I had no pace. You know, I had no strength. You know, I didn't score that many goals. so yeah, I was not to a great start, but, you know, they just... Because... You know, I think I had a football brain, which might surprise a few people, but, you know, I could see a few things before they happen. And you know, the majority of people who make professional sport, you've got a picture in their mind. And, you know, people might be surprised by me thinking that about myself, because I'm derogatory about myself. So I just think that I just wish I would have had an opportunity to play in the middle of the park. You know, because of my energy. And one thing I could do is run all day, but that opportunity was never afforded to me until I went to Crewe with Dario Gradi.
Yeah. Like, were Manchester United right to let you go at that time?
Yeah, of course, because I was centre forward and I wasn't good enough. So, it was an amazing time, and obviously I had the car crash when I went home. That's well documented that, you know, I ended up getting released from Manchester United. And then at the same night, you know, writing my little fiesta off and ending up in hospital. So it was a bad day.
Oh, I didn't realise that. So you crash your car on the day you get let go.
Yeah, so I got released, and I was thinking, how do I tell my parents? And on the way home, I phoned one of my best pals up, Jamie, and said, listen, let's go for a game of snooker before I go home. I just want to, you know, clear my head. And, and on the way home, I crashed head-on collision at 50 mile an hour, and I had to get, you know, lifted out of the car. And, you know, I couldn't feel my left arm in hospital for a week. So, yeah, it wasn't great. And then, obviously, when your mother and father come to your hospital bed and you've got to tell them, you know, that not only, you know, you've had obviously they knew I had a car crash, but you've been released as well. You know, it wasn't a great day.
No, it doesn't sound like it. Would you have guessed at that point, to say you're driving out of Manchester that day, did you feel that Scholes, Beckham, Butt, the Nevilles, Giggs was an obvious one, I guess, but did you feel they were all going to have the careers they had or anything close to it?
Well, you would never believe that David Beckham's now one of the most famous people in the world. Paul Scholes was it Zinedine said that, you know, what's it like being the best midfielder in the world? He said, ask Paul Scholes. I think that was the quote he used. And, you know, you see Nicky Butt, how many games he played. Gary Neville, you know, one of the best right backs England ever had. So it was just that I didn't think they would go on to be as good as that, but I'd always thought they would have made a career, and most of it Manchester United, but, you know, to be one of the most famous sports people in the world, one of the best midfielders in the world, you would think that would have been, you know, almost impossible, but they've done it.
Yeah. You two must have played against each other down the years, yeah?
Yeah, Robbie couldn't catch me.
Right.
He tried to, yeah.
What was he like?
To be fair, I couldn't catch Kev when he used to come on.
Kev.
Yeah.
I have an image of what Robbie Savage was like on the pitch.
Well, no, I've spoken to Rob about this himself, and I think sometimes you kind of... I think we both realise we weren't of the class of some of the names that he've mentioned, but you know full well that we could have done a job, and we know full well that we were confident in our ability. And I've said it to him many a time. I think he spoke about it there, trying to downplay how good a player he actually was and how effective he was on the pitch as well. And you did, Rob. I think the first time I played against you was at Leicester when I was at Sunderland, the first time I played. And I think he come over to the sideline just as I was, I don't know, and he's come over and absolutely lifted me out of it. And then he just kind of laughed in my face or something and run off. And that was the introduction to Robbie. But I think he does. I think he does downplay how good and how influential he was on the pitch, because set pieces, if anyone would see the set pieces at Birmingham and Blackburn, a majority were coming from him.
Yeah. Was he mouthy?
Oh yeah, he was certainly mouthy.
Joe, I look back, Joe, now and thinking what an absolute fool I was sometimes on a football pitch. And, you know, but what I will say about myself and Kevin, I think Kevin alluded to it there, that, you know, we weren't the most gifted players in the world, but, you know, I count our careers as a huge success because you haven't got to win trophies to be, you know, a great sports person. I think playing Premier League football week in, week out, you know, is a massive success. And something like, you know, I played 346 games in the Premier League, and, you know, Kevin would have played around about that as well. And if you think how many young kids and how many players out there want to be a footballer, not only to make a living out of football, whether it's League Two, the Conference, whatever, but to actually play in the Premier League 11 consecutive seasons and captain four Premier League sides. And I know I didn't win much, one trophy, but, you know, if my little boy asked me now, Dad, do you think I'll play football for a living? Because he's, you know, he's at an academy club, yeah. And I'd say as long as you enjoy yourself and give it your best shot. But to play 11 years in the Premier League, I count that myself personally as a huge success.
Yeah, no, it's an amazing achievement. You're in the top 2% in the world at the time when you're both doing it. When you say you look back and cringe at yourself in the pitch, like, and this is totally from afar my opinion of you. So it's through the prism of the media and like the snapshots on the pitch. But I look back and you as a player and I think, oh well, he probably fancied himself a bit. He had the hair. He was in people's face, you know, he was altercations with Dion Dublin and everybody else, and probably just a bit immature. Is that fair, or is that more the caricature that wasn't fair?
Well, on the pitch, yeah, I look back now and I've done things which I completely regret. Obviously, getting Justin Edinburgh sent off in the final, you know, and then they went on to win it, because when I look back now, it's an embarrassment. And, you know, being a pundit now, when I'm trying to have a go at people for doing similar, you know, it's very hypocritical of me to say those things. But the one good thing is I've probably been in most situations which people have done, whether it's sending off, whether it's, you know, play acting, whether it's, you know, something silly. You know, I've been in those situations. So, of course, I look back and think, what an idiot I was. But, you know, some of the stuff I done, you know, some weren't my fault. You know, obviously, you alluded there to the Dion Dublin, you know, headbutt where, you know, it was a bad tackle in the first place. You know, I got up and shouted, you know, an obscenity, an everyday obscenity, which loads of football players will shout on a football pitch. You know, and, you know, the reaction from Dion was, you know, I was shocked, really, because we used to play together up front, and I've got nothing against Dion Dublin. But you can see, I was a winner, and I hit the battle.
Yeah.
I didn't care what I had to do to win that game, and, you know, it might be wrong, but when you're in the heat of a battle for 90 minutes, you know, all that mattered to me was the 10 people I played alongside and doing everything I could for those people to try and win the game and to make the fans happy.
Yeah. Before you go, we want to ask you about the game on Friday night. And obviously this Welsh team have given you some amazing moments of late.
Go on, wake your kids up. Something special is happening here tonight. Wales are in this, going into the semi-finals. What a ball. What a header. Across Courtois. It's Gunter getting forward down that right-hand side. But just look at the desire. He gets their first pass on the viral and he plants it into the corner of the net. Unbelievable. Wales are going into the semi-finals of the European Championship. Brilliant substitution once again. Amazing, amazing stuff.
I just, Kev, think a tip for Robbie, if you could pass it on to him. Is it lacking a bit of motion?
Yeah.
As you can see, Joe, you know, not only, you know, I'm surprised I haven't won awards for that commentary as well.
Have you? Right, okay. Yeah. Friday night, I mean, so like, geez, that, it was the most amazing summer. I mean, I think making the film about it's a bit overboard, but we'll you know,
you can brush that aside.
I've got to take you up on that. Why? Because if why is it? Because it was incredible. It was incredible.
We'd only make it if we won. That's just us. Don't worry about it.
Better team, Rob. Better nation.
Yeah, but
so.
When have you got the semi-finals?
Nah. I mean, we've only talked about Italia 90 for the last...
Yeah, we got to the quarter-final World Cup. We're not sure about that.
The quarter, not the semi. I know it was a World Cup, but quarters... Yeah.
I'm with you, Joe. I am with you, totally with you. I just think that just goes overboard and everything, I think.
So Iceland shouldn't have celebrated. So if there's a film about Iceland, they're remarkable team. You think that's wrong as well?
Nah, it's not for a film. I think you can watch it back. I think you can make a documentary on it, and I'd settle for
come
that.
Will it happen again? It was amazing. It was amazing. The whole country. You know, I've seen the Republic of Ireland fans travel in their thousands, and great support. Great support. And you're not telling me if the Republic of Ireland got to the semi-finals, you know,
no,
surely...
No, we're winners.
We haven't won that.
That's why we haven't made a movie.
I think it was great. Anyway. To the game.
Yeah, well, Martin O'Neill. Tell us about Martin O'Neill. What did he like you? Did he love you? Did you get on well?
Yeah, well, you know, we have a laugh together now. I was scared to death of him as my manager, but I tell you what respect he commanded. And, you know, for me, it was reverse psychology. I remember him, you know, one of the first, when I got to know him really, you know, well, really, as my manager, when I was sitting at home watching Match of the Day with my family, just in my first season at Leicester. 2-2, Muzzies, he scored two. And it's a true story that I'm in my house and got all my family round. You know, my father was still with us, my mum, my gran, you know, my wife. And we're sitting there. Match of the Day comes on 2-2. And John Watson interviews the gaffer, Martin O'Neill, and says, 2-2, they're Muzzy, there were two goals. But he said, I've got to tell you about the boy, Savage. What a game he had. So Martin O'Neill said, yes, John. He said, he only lacks one thing. So John Watson said, what's that? And Martin went, ability. But then he pulled me on the Monday morning and he got me in his office. He said, listen, you know, you see Matt? And I said, yeah. He said, listen, you know, it's a great thing. He said, you can have, you know, I've signed better players than you technically. I've signed better players than you with more ability. But I tell you what, you know, I'd rather have a big heart, all the desire in the world, and a little bit of ability. And he said, that's why you're on my team. So, and I took that forward with me, you know, and I'd done what I'm good at. And if you look at this Republic of Ireland side, I think what he does, he gets the best out of average players. Okay, they've got some very, very good players, but there's players in that side who you would say are average, like possibly some of the Wales players are. But what he does, he gets every ounce of ability, energy, desire out of them, and I think that's what makes him such a good manager.
What we hear from the players is he's pretty hands off. He'll name the team maybe just an hour before kickoff. Yeah. He's not going to burden you with lots of detail. He'll just say, go out and do your stuff. He's not going to be telling you, you know, Pep Guardiola's style, you need to be in zone 5 at this time and zone 6 at this time.
No, at Leicester, I'm not sure if it's the same now, but he used to come in, as you say, an hour and a half before with a piece of paper. The team wrote on a piece of paper, name the team, and then go out, and then he'd have, you know, it was Steve Walford, John Robertson, you know, there doing the team talks. Then he'd come in 10 minutes before kickoff and then just go through it with us. And, you know, fantastic man, fantastic manager. He's what he'd done for me in my career was unbelievable. And, you know, I watched the Republic of Ireland also in the Euros. Was it the Italy game? Robbie Brady who scored?
Yeah.
You know, that game was incredible, and his passion on the sideline was immense. And isn't that, obviously I'd love both the Republic and Wales to qualify from that group, but I can't see it. I think Republic or Wales will, you know, probably try for that second spot. And I think this game's huge. I know Republic got injuries. You know, the bad thing for Republic is that, you know, Gareth Bale's fit, and he is you would say the best player on the park, one of the best players in the world.
Yeah.
And he could be the difference once again, and he always usually is for Wales. But let's not forget the form Joe Allen's in. Aaron Ramsey, you know, it was magnificent in the Euros for Wales. So, you know, with the Republic of Ireland injuries, you know, Wales have got a chance. But
is it a must-win game for Wales, Rob?
I think yes, Kev. I think it is, because Wales dropped points against Georgia, at home. Which was a bad, you know, bad result. So I would say that if we've got any aspirations of getting in that second place, I think we've got to go to, is it the Viva Stadium now it's called?
Yeah,
we've got to try and win the game. But you know, I would say that we've got a chance, because they have got injuries, Ireland.
Will you be there yourself?
No, unfortunately not. No, I've got a weekend off, but I'll be watching on the TV. Big John Artson, who, you know, was my roommate for 7 years, and I think he's doing the game with Kevin for Radio 5 Live. Is that right, Kev?
That's right, Robbie.
I'm allowed to say that on this station.
Oh, you are.
Oh, right.
We have Hartson on the show all the time. Is there a good story about being a roommate of his that we should play to him?
I've got lots. I've got a new podcast out, which I suppose I can mention. It's called Flintoff Sav and the Ping Pong Guy, and this, people can download it, and this, that's Freddie Flintoff.
Can you really download it? Are you sure?
I think you can. Can you? Yeah, of course you can. Is that iTunes? Yeah, you know what I mean. You know what I mean, Kevin. And this week we're going to do, so it goes out on a Monday, so next Monday we're going to do international stories. And I've got some Big John, you know, some of the stories roomed together. Fantastic.
Well, give us one.
I'll give you one. Listen, I don't want the listeners to think, you know, I'm big time or anything, but you know, in the year of being a Premier League footballer, I was very, very fortunate, and to this day still, you know, can't believe how lucky I was. And you know, I love cars, you know, and I had a very nice car. And John, because we used to stay in the Vale of Glamorgan Hotel, obviously when he played for Celtic, he used to travel down, you know, get the plane down, and he didn't have a car. So one day he borrowed my car. He said, "Can I borrow your car to go and see my mother and father in Swansea?" He said, "Yeah, John." I said, "Please be careful with it." Anyway, he took it home. He brought it back about 12:30, 1 in the morning. And next morning I get for breakfast, and a huge scratch down the side of it. So I was panicking. I went to wake him up. I said, "John, my car." He said, "Oh, savage. I forgot to tell you. I caught the gate on the way into my mum and dad's house. I didn't want to leave it on the road." So he said, "I caught the gate." And he had a massive scratch down the side of my car, which I forgive him because, you know, he paid for it in the end. But devastated. And it was a nice car.
Don't doubt that.
With F. And it didn't have four letters.
Thanks so much for your time. I know we've taken up too much of it, but
that's fine.
Great to get you on. Cheers.
Thanks, Robbie.
Cheers, guys.
Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.
Getting dirty looks from producer in there, JP, because I asked for just a cup of boiling hot water, Ronnie O'Sullivan style. Just don't have tea this late at night, but I like something hot to sip. So it's like tea. It's like a weak tea. Very weak tea. It's just water.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm drinking over
here.
Take
a bit of lemon in it.
Yeah, I might do that. I don't have time though. We're on air. So Jeff Hendrick on the show this evening around 9:30. Be good to check in with him. What an amazing year he's had in his career. And increasingly important for us as Friday night comes into focus. We'll bring you what Roy Keane was saying today in his press conference in a moment. Just on our body language chat on the back of the comments from the UConn coach Luigi Auriemma, which you can Google. He was talking about kids being too cool for school these days and body language being off and no enthusiasm anymore, really, because enthusiasm is very cool, and looking at the scoreboard and only happy if they've scored, and just a range of different things. Actually, a big enough reaction from texters listening into the chat. Like Emmett Keane says, too many would rather look cool and lose rather than put yourself out there and look bad and win. I played college ball in America and I saw this all the time. That's not Emmett Keane, by the way. It's a different listener, but the point still stands.
Yeah, perfect.
Emmett Keane did say kids these days far more interested in a step over than a pass. That's the root of it. And then tweeted again to say, I did actually use the phrase, kids these days shoot me. But we take his point.
I'll take a bit of that, but I think there's an element of we're actually taking that little bit of freedom away from our players now as well, where everyone would... We're actually manufacturing a team or 11 players that can trap a ball, pass it. And then when you're looking for something different...
Yeah, I take that point.
You're looking for something different, perhaps in wider, whatever it would be, and they're not able to do that now.
Yeah, that's a fair point. It's a style over substance argument that
Auriemma is
making.
Totally.
I mean, funny enough, it applies to every level. I guarantee, myself included, I've played on football teams or I've played at Astro, and there is the guy... There is always the guy with flash boots and the nicest gear, and he's rubbish.
Shaved head
sometimes.
up the side.
Yeah. Nice little stud earring, diamond, and he's rubbish. And you think, you look like an idiot in the really nice gear and being rubbish. But anyway, we'll move on. So, Roy Keane in very good form this afternoon. As is often the case, they'll divvy up the media duties. So Martin O'Neill spoke yesterday, and... we brought you the most exciting 2 minutes of it, and that was a stretch. Whereas Keane comes along today, and it was good fun. He was his usual interesting self. Got off to an unusual start in that they had some competition winners in, getting to ask Roy some questions. They had two girls in, 7, 8, 9, kind of 10 years old. And that was how I don't think a lot of the press knew what was going on, but that was how the press conference started. Roy looked at them and said, "Go easy on me, girls."
Right, you've been hanging around with Martin for a long time. Is he your best friend?
Hanging around him a long time. Is he my best friend? No, probably not. There's a few lads in Cork, my best friends, but We have a very good working relationship, very obviously professional, and I think we get on pretty well together because we don't see too much of each other. I think that's a big factor. But yeah, he's one of my best friends, yeah.
Nice. He was asked later on by one of them any advice for becoming a footballer, and it amounted to train hard and work hard and listen to your coach and stay away from boys, which is good. You know, he's smiling. Put everyone at ease. It was a nice start to the press conference. He wasn't actually willing to answer every question, though.
Can I just ask you briefly about Manchester United? I think it's 9 games now.
No, you can't.
Fair enough.
No, you can try, but no, I'm obviously here to talk about Ireland. Our priorities and trying to get a result on Friday.
Fair enough.
Another time, no problem.
Okay.
Not today, Sky.
You were happy with that, weren't you?
Yeah, I thought that was really good. Because he has in the past allowed himself at Ipswich and Sunderland to just be whatever the story of the week is, the story of the day is. He's allowed himself to be sucked into that whole circus with Sky in particular. Do it. They send their reporters out to all ask the same questions, and then they'll put a package together. And it's very, I mean, it's clever on their part, and it may, you know, they get a really nice sample size across the game on whatever the issue is. But I don't think we want that to become. I don't think we want the Irish press conferences to become their vehicle for that.
Yeah,
you know, and Roy talking about Manchester United for 5 minutes on Sky, and he spotted that early on, and obviously said no.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's the way it is, isn't it?
Yeah, so how we approach Friday is being talked about a fair bit, particularly given the injury situation. So Roy was asked about that and what his hopes for Friday night are, and is a draw good enough?
I know working with the manager and the rest of the staff and the group of players we have, if you think our mindset going into the game of football on Friday night at the Aviva is a draw, then you are sadly mistaken. We're here to win. We came into the job, having known the players now 2 or 3 years, we're here to win.
Would you take a draw, that said?
Yeah, I think I would at the moment. I would. I don't think it's the worst result. There's more pressure on Wales to try and force the issue, but
God, I can see why Saipan happened. This attitude.
Yeah, it is.
This attitude.
No, we've got a great chance. We've got a great chance. Yeah. I think we've got a good chance.
But a draw is fine, you think?
Yeah. It's not the worst result at all. Keeps everything ticking over. Being in this stage, or being at this stage of the group, with how it's gone up to now and sitting on top, it's it would be a favourable result, I think, for us, yeah.
You said to Robbie Savage earlier, do they feel that this is a must-win game? And they do. So Wales are coming here really to
win. I think they're going to have to try and force the issue at some stage, aren't they? And you think as well, particularly watching James McLean at the weekend, seeing the pace of Shane Long. Shane Long needs a high defence against him. He needs a high back line where they're going to have a bit of possession. Those two in particular, particularly Shane Long, I think he's a player that could really capitalise if Wales were trying to force the issue and trying to dominate possession.
Mm. So the injury situation is not good, and Roy was making the point that it's really not something him or the management team are getting too bogged down in.
Because we're not really in control of it. We're not, you know, the lads, we obviously selected a large number of players. One or two were doubtful anyway before that, which we knew. It was just the lads over the last few days that, again, you were hoping would make it. And obviously people like McCarthy would be a big doubt. Because you could waste your time and energy talking about the lads who weren't here or the lads who were injured, but we've got to focus on the game and the lads we have. And if you keep talking about the lads who aren't here, part of it is you've been disrespectful to the group that you still have. And we got a good group of players, and we'd be ready for Friday night. There would be no excuses, because we'll have 11 lads starting and we'll have lads off the bench. And obviously I made a comment a few weeks ago, a bit tongue-in-cheek, about players who aren't here and the medical stuff. We're not in control of that. We're in control of the players who were here, who were training. And that's why you've got to have that mentality to just get on. But it happens to other teams, happens to other clubs, happens to international managers. And it's obviously such a big game. Yeah, you're thinking, well, maybe another time, but it is what it is. And we'll be ready Friday, one way or the other.
So let's flesh out the Irish team, which is likely to start on Friday.
Mm. Well, we've tried to think of a way. I certainly had a look through personnel and tried to come up with a system that probably suits.
O'Neill has obviously flirted with 4-2-3-1, with the diamond, and with 4-3-3. And
yeah,
you've had a look at personnel. You feel 4-2-3-1 mightn't be the worst option.
Yeah, it probably suits the side that you've got an option of a 4-3-3, but if you're playing a 4-3-3, then it looks to me like you'd probably have to play James McLean a little bit deeper in a three-man midfield on the left of a three.
With Whelan and Hendrick,
yeah. And then you probably, then it's be a straight fight. You probably look at McGeady or Hogan on the wing. I think McGeady's ahead. His experience tells that. So McGeady would probably start up front on the left-hand side of a three-man attack with Long and Walter. So essentially it would be Randolph in goal, Coleman right back, Keogh, O'Shea, Ward.
Oh, which is fine, isn't it?
Yeah.
Does it lack a bit of pace? Does Keogh have pace? Not massive.
No, but you've got a side there, but you've got Whelan there protecting. You were hoping there with Glenn Whelan that'll be in front. He'd have not necessarily a specific job, but he'd have the game know-how, the mentality and the experience that he's got as well to try to lock onto someone like Bale. Bale comes into his area.
Worst case scenario, just to throw it at you. Whelan's legs, I'm not saying they're gone, but he's no pace anymore. Like, you can see it at certain instances.
But he's never had pace. He's not been a quick player, has he? So
not really. But he can really struggle. So if we're high at any stage, high line, and Bale is obviously given a completely free role under Coleman, you would just think, imagine a ball clipped over the top and you've got O'Shea, Whelan, Keogh, and Bale in a foot race.
Yeah, well, that's where you're looking.
That's a worry.
Particularly looking at John O'Shea, again, with his experience, not to get caught out like that. Always give yourself 10 or 15 yards. Not
20 yards. Yeah. And Randolph, you step up 15.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's just football. That's the way that it happens anyway. Again, I spoke about with the necessity for Wales to come and win the game, I think they probably will have more possession. That could lead to frustration from our home supporters.
You think we will or they will?
No, they will. And I think that could lead to a bit of frustration. Perhaps when one or two of our players do get in possession, then there's always a tendency then to perhaps try and rush your pass, try and rush it forward quickly and giving it away. So if that composure is there within the side, then I can't see that being a problem if Wales do have possession.
Right.
That they will be, they'll play open and expansive. They will. That's the way that Coleman's got them playing. That's been the pass over or the takeover from Gary Speed. That is where you've got Shane Long. You've got a huge weapon in Shane Long. Shane Long could outrun any one of Wales's back four, back three, however they're going to play in the match.
So if it's a two, you have Whelan and Hendrick.
Whelan and Hendrick, yeah.
Itself.
As a two.
And then Shane Long up top and the three. Behind Long, Walters on the right with three goals in his last seven Premier League games.
Yeah.
You think McGeady at 10, and you think McLean out wide. And even, if you're right...
I think it would suit James playing out wide better.
Well,
I think he'd suit that himself.
If Wales have a lot of the ball...
Did he play in a three-way against Italy in the Euros, James McLean, in the three-man midfield? I think he did. I think I'm right in saying that. So There's a chance for him to play a little bit deeper. Mm. He'll be
up and down.
Yeah,
it's the beauty of him.
Watching him last week against Bellerin, it's perfect for him.
And Walters will be up and down as well. So there's plenty of protection there. But you know, if Wales do have a lot of the ball, clipped balls to the triangle of McGeady, McLean, and Long. McLean and Long's pace in particular, and hopefully McGeady
backing
them up. Yeah, that's not the worst way to be trying to hit them from deep.
It's not, and again, I just referenced the point there. It's of course not going to be relevant to the game, but again, just watching James McLean last week and against Arsenal, and the reluctance of West Brom to try and engage Arsenal when they were stepping over the halfway line, dropping off 4-5-1 essentially. But one ball, continuous one ball, whether it would be Rondon running off shoulders, whether it would be McLean himself bombing forward himself, one ball can cut that side that's in possession out. Mm. So that's just something that's in my mind was at the game of the weekend, that the game could follow a similar sort of pattern, but on the flip side of it, it leads to frustrations from the home support.
I was just about to make that point. I think the way you're describing this game sounds incredibly plausible. I hadn't really
when you're the home side, the onus has to be on you to maybe go a little bit more.
Are we really at a point where our game at home is to like hit Wales on the break? But rather than keep possession.
But that's, you look at West Brom doing it the weekend, they won 3-1. Winning tactic. West Brom were comfortable without the ball. Mm. And they were a real threat without it. You've got McLean and Walters, who have got serious energy, can get up and down. You've got a brilliant fullback in Coleman that can get support. Ward himself is very good. He certainly won't shirk the opportunity to get forward. So you look at the personnel and you look at how, I'm not saying that will be the pattern how it goes, because the insistence that particularly Roy Keane would put on him for the midfield, like, get the ball, keep the ball.
Yeah.
So it won't run as a pattern like at the weekend where Arsenal had 75% possession, where it won't be like that.
Yeah.
But there will be spells when Wales will have the ball. Mm. And I think unless he can get it to Bale and we're nice, tight and compact, I think that's when Wales could be at the most vulnerable.
Here's Keane talking about how he sees the game going.
Now, the things can go against us, decisions, and we're up against a very good team. Probably not much in between the two teams, hard one to call. But looking at our own group of players and the manager we have and the staff, I'm always confident we can get a good result for Ireland. But of course, he's saying here on was it Tuesday, saying, yeah, we can get, but we've got to trust the players and have confidence in them. And as I said, we know. The beauty for me as a coach working the group, we know to give it their all, and that's a good feeling to have. We'll have to defend properly, we'll have to produce moments of quality. I think we're going to go on and win the game. But these players have, generally speaking, never let us down.
So, Gareth Bale.
Mm.
Oh, he's a top player. Oh, Bale, brilliant player. Been doing it regularly at the highest level now the last few years. I always liked him, even liked him when he was at my manager Sunderland. He came up with Southampton, he was best player in the park. I think he equalised in injury time, he was excellent, and I was at left back. You follow these players' careers from the outside looking in, but obviously a talented boy, and he's fulfilled his potential and probably more. Top player, like watching him playing. A big player for Wales, a big player for Real Madrid. And again, it's not a day for comparing him to other players and whatever. He's a brilliant, brilliant footballer in his own right. And do you know what? Our lads should look forward to the challenge of them playing against the best. You want to play with the best and against the best, and we'll have a chance on Friday because Bale is up there with some of the top players in the world. No getting away from that. Brilliant player.
Do you have to come up with a special plan, or is it that too simplistic?
That's up to the players, you know. We have to get tight. Listen, what you find with the top players, you know, I think other players and coaches have tried to come up with a plan before, but the top players seem to figure it out, and they'll affect the game. So Bale has done that a number of years for Madrid, and again, on the big occasions. So I can't say we have any particular plan, but I would say that we respect all the Welsh players. They've got some other good players around Bale that give him that, I suppose, foundation to go and express himself, and that's why he's a big impact on all their results, whether it be goals or assists. Stats will tell you that, but your eyes don't lie to him. You know, when you see a good player, he's a good player.
I don't know if you picked up on that then. Did you hear the pause when he was asked the question of a special plan for Gareth Bale? A pause, probably a smirk of some sort, and then immediately cameras going. There was no camera flashes at all there, or no camera sounds through virtue of the rest of it.
Yeah.
So almost if they're trying to get that key moment when his face. Yeah,
I listened to the full 15 minutes of the press conference, and any time he was smiling, you could hear the click, 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 click.
Yeah.
So with the competition winners at the start, a lot of clicks as he was as he was smiling. You know, is Martin O'Neill your best friend? He's my best friend.
Yeah.
And it click, 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 click.
Yeah.
Yeah. They wanted Roy smiling.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, is there a plan for Bale? No, that's down to the players. part of me thought, well,
there's,
it's not just down to the players.
I'd like you to have a plan too.
Do
you know what? The one thing I think with Bale, right? So, are you going to? I saw a piece at the weekend. I can't remember who'd actually wrote it at the weekend saying, no, man for man on Gareth Bale. Man for man. So who are you going to put man for man?
Like people have said Glenn Whelan. Stephen Hunt said Glenn Whelan. I don't think you should put Whelan anywhere near Gareth Bale.
No.
For two reasons.
Absolutely no chance.
One, he doesn't have the legs. And two, Gareth Bale can then suck Glenn Whelan out of position.
That's what I'm thinking. He's one of the best readers of the game that we've got, who can just stop little no chance.
Like if Glenn Whelan's in the team, he does not move away from the centre.
Gareth Bale is that clever where he'll just go and stand the right wing, he'll go and stand the left wing.
And Whelan out there is dead.
Yeah, I don't necessarily see that being a viable option.
He can just about get away with it with his legs as a triangle with the centre halves. Mm. But I mean, Bale taking Whelan for a walk out wide. Are we mad?
Are you saying that? Yeah. That's your words, not mine, Joseph. You
well,
know.
I stand by them.
Yeah, good. And
he can't,
I would disagree with that to an extent.
He can't.
No, I can't see it happening. I don't think it will be a man marking job.
Right. Just passing him on.
You could have had maybe a James McCarthy, who would have been the better option, I feel, to take that role, but it's unlikely we'll be fit. If he's fit, hopefully we will be. We'll see, but I can't see that being the case. I think it'll be more. Roy Keane has spoke about it himself there. He's saying about being compact at times, you know, see spells through in games. It will be about two or three, perhaps, in his area. We're going to have to try and see this through. We're going to have to get. But I don't necessarily see that tactic in place. And that then, what Roy's saying there, that's game mentality, that's game know-how. Yeah. Players in positions, right time. And it's not necessarily saying to one specific person, you go and stop him.
Yeah.
It's, lads, you know what he's got. Yeah. They know what he's got.
Yeah.
You're going to have to try and deal with that situation. Get it dealt with early, and then we can build up from there.
You just can't let him run with the ball. If Bale one deficiency, and it's not even a deficiency by the standards of normal mortals, but if it's by the absolute elite, he maybe doesn't have unbelievable technique in tight spaces. Touch can sometimes get away from him. Now, what you don't want is what happened against Maicon, where he's got space to run into, and then you're dead.
Yeah,
so and you just get tied to him.
And it's probably right side as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
Keeping right side. He could shoot. He can shoot with his right foot, but it's obviously not one of his strengths. Yeah. So it's trying to keep his strength nullified.
Yeah, no, it'll be fine. Bale to score four. We will take a break. It seems Rooney is going to Everton in the summer.
Off the Ball.
Home of live Premier League every Sunday from midday.
On News Talk 106 to 108.
Interview with Jeff Hendrick on the way very shortly. Miguel Delaney and the London Independent in the last hour. Wayne Rooney expected to leave Manchester United for boyhood club Everton this summer. An exclusive from Miguel. Old Trafford sources have said United may even be willing to waive a transfer fee, while Everton would be capable of offering a deal worth 150 grand a week for Wayne Rooney. One text in. If Everton want a player like Rooney, why not just get Ross Barkley to play with a backpack full of weights? The thought occurred to me. Is Ross Barkley not just a younger, more mobile Wayne Rooney? And who they want to develop and turn into a world-class player?
Yeah, I don't think Ross Barkley could play as a number nine like Wayne Rooney has played so often through his career.
But as a 10, you can't sign Rooney as a 9.
No, that's what I'm meaning. But
you could perhaps
play him on the left of a right, the way that Koeman plays. But I don't. No,
is this a waste of 150 grand a week for Everton?
Well, it's a commercial opportunity. That's the way that I think Everton are looking at. They're looking at it for the bigger picture, I suppose. That they're hoping that the money that they'll pay transfer fee could be waived in what we're seeing. There could be no transfer fee. Mm. So the 150 grand a week. So you're looking at 15 million, probably over 2 years. I would say 3 years, perhaps. So 45 million. So a lot of merchandise you've got to get back in there.
A lot.
And you're still looking to try and get value for money on the pitch as well. That's ultimately what it's got to cost him. If Wayne Rooney's not playing, then the merchandise or the commercial side of this is irrelevant. Mm. And he hasn't necessarily been producing or showing the level of form that a Barkley, that even probably a Morales over the last few weeks as well that's been in that side. So it's strange, but I could see it happening. This has been on the cards for a while, yeah.
It's a sentimental one. It's a commercial one. Because
Bill Kenwright, the chairman, will love it.
That's what Bill, see sense here. Get some sabermetric guys in, Bill, because you're thinking with your heart here.
But the thing is, you could get Rooney rejuvenated for a couple of seasons, desperate to try and produce what he produced early on in his career as well. Because he did leave under a cloud as well. It wasn't great when he left the club.
Do you think he's still capable of that, though? It looks to me like he's just gone.
Yeah, it has looked that way to me. Not necessarily gone. He's just not looked. He's not looked his old self. No. And I've spoke constantly to you about that little devilment in him, that little menace that's in him. I've not seen that. No.
Everton are about mobility and energy.
Yeah.
And everybody working to a plan and pressing together.
Yeah.
And that's the direction Koeman's going in.
Yes.
And I feel like by Rooney, they're just buying a problem. 150k a week problem.
It could be, yeah. And we all know Romelu Lukaku was offered the biggest deal in the club's history last week, supposedly 130, 140 grand a week. So Wayne Rooney's going to go ahead of that. The Everton's top paid player, I think, at the moment is Lukaku on about 70.
Yeah.
So you're doubling your highest paid player ever in the history of the club to get him in. Mm. It's a big risk, yeah.
Yeah. I feel if Brad Pitt's in the room, he's screaming, no way.
Is that what, yeah?
Yeah. Absolutely no way, because this just doesn't make any statistical sense. Mm. It's just a commercial, sentimental shot and the hope, you're buying a name.
I think that you said that the commercial side outweighs the actual practicalities of this deal. Yeah,
unless Manchester United are using him as a way to soften the blow of taking Lukaku.
That makes
more sense. You know?
So you're surmising a bit there. Then. So it's a free transfer for Rooney to get him in.
Yeah,
and a huge offer for Lukaku. Yeah.
You can take Rooney, and we'll give you 50-60 million.
If Abramovich, Ibrahimovic stays around, is Lukaku going to play ahead of him? Is he going to go to United and sit on the bench for a season or whatever it would be for Lukaku? I can't see that one.
No. Okay. Well, we're kind of out of time. We've got to go on. I think you probably would get Lukaku in ahead of Zlatan next season and have Zlatan as a beautiful impact sub.
Would you? I don't think Lukaku's at his best unless he's got defenders that push up and play high. You rarely ever see Ibrahimovic with a chance to go and run in behind defenders. Everything with his back to play. Zlatan Ibrahimovic is head and shoulders above Lukaku with his back to play.
Yeah. We are moving on because it's going to be a big night on Friday for Jeff Hendrick, and he's on the way next.
Off the ball.
Get all the best bits at newstalk.com/offtheball.
Newstalk 106 to 108.
Delighted to say that Jeff Hendrick has made some time for us as well. Jeff, I was laughing to myself the other day because I saw that both yourself and Robbie Brady had been nominated for both the Young Player and the Senior Player of the Year Awards for Ireland. And I'd say at this stage, you two must be looking at each other and saying, what is it with us two?
I don't know. I don't think we didn't say them words. I was more a bit surprised. We're about 25 now. The young category's a bit crazy, aren't I?
Yeah. Are you two very, very good friends, or is it just one of those things in football where you've crossed paths right the way through?
No, I'm sure both of us would say we're very good friends. You know, it's been brilliant getting them to join here as well. We room with each other every trip as well. We used to get lists together to games and all, so it's brilliant to be back at the same time.
I didn't realise you roomed together. Are you similar personalities?
Yeah. We've got a lot in common. We know a lot of the same people. You know, we're not far from each other. We weren't growing up. So we know a lot of what's going on back at home. And I suppose we are the same. We like to take the piss out of each other as well whenever we can.
Yeah. That St. Kevin's team that you both played for, was that cleaning up DDSLs and the best team in town and everybody knew about you? Or was it just that you two have happened to come from a normal enough team?
I'd say, obviously, there was, you know, we were one of the stronger teams. You know, there was other good teams, the likes of Belvedere and Cherry Orchard were pretty good, but
yeah,
we won a few trophies every year.
Right.
We went unbeaten in the All-Ireland scene as well, which was brilliant for us growing up. Such a big competition, and to travel all around Ireland and play big games and then to go on and win it every year was something special.
Would everybody, when you were 12, 13, 14, 15, have probably picked you and Robbie out as the pick of the bunch, do you think?
I don't have a clue.
What was your sense as a player? Did you feel you had a chance? Because I know, I look at your career from afar and you go over to Derby at 16, you're playing in all the Irish teams all the way up. So it looks like from a very early age, you looked like you had a great chance.
Possibly, yeah. You know, I was lucky enough for I was in a good team and then I went on a lot of trials as well.
What kind of clubs?
You know, I went to maybe 13 or 14 different clubs.
Right.
I probably couldn't even be able to name them all right now.
Yeah. Did you get offers out of them?
Yeah, I had a few offers. I was going on trials from, I don't know, maybe the age of 12 or 13. Some of the trials I enjoyed. Some was counting down the days to get home.
Right.
You know, it can be lonely at times, but obviously you enjoy the trials. And a few other Irish lads with you on trial it helped break up the time when you weren't at the training ground training. You know, you'd either be in a hotel or in digs with a family. And it is hard, I suppose, when you're that young.
Jeff, why did you choose Derby? Because, was it facilities? Was it personnel at the club? What was in your reasoning for choosing Derby?
There was five of us from Ireland, the same age group, which definitely helped. And yeah, I just got a feel when I went on trial straight away. All the lads who were there were brilliant with me. They made me feel welcome. Just little things chatted to me when I was in the digs. asked me if I wanted to go to the shop, walk down the shop, they'd chat to me.
Mm.
Some clubs I went to, you'd be lucky to get a word out of players. And
right.
It was just brutal for a few days.
It's amazing the small things like that would swing it, isn't it? Literally, they just talk to me.
Yeah, he's right though, he's saying that, Jeff. Yeah. I mean, I've seen it at a lot of clubs when lads have come on trial, whether they've been from Ireland or other countries, and lads won't take the time to just to try to, even if it's just hello, bit of a chat, where you're from, what you do. Little things like this mean a lot, particularly, as you can imagine, you, Jeff, going over at, 13, 14, when you were a young kid as well. It's a tough environment, isn't it, to go into?
Definitely, yeah. Even like, you're going over there to and you're wanting to show off what you can do, and you know, if you don't feel comfortable, you know, in your surroundings, you're not going to be able to perform the way you want it.
Yeah.
And that's what I felt when I went into Derby. It helped even knowing one or two people. And then, you know, you feel relaxed and you feel comfortable to train and, you know, call for the ball or do whatever you need to do on the training pitch.
Jeff, who are your players that you admired or your favourite players growing up, midfielders?
Kevin Coban.
Figured that. Obviously there was Killer. Was there anyone else, I wonder?
I grew up supporting Man United as a kid, so right. I'd look at the likes of Paul Scholes and Roy Keane.
Yeah.
But my all-time favourite would be Zinedine Zidane. Just the way he played the game was unbelievable. And even growing up, I'd, you know, if I had a bit of time, I'd just go on YouTube and watch clips of him. And he wouldn't have been the quickest player.
Yeah.
His touch, just how far ahead he was, you know, thinking. He was always a few steps ahead, the way he'd manipulate the ball. He'd always kept it away from players. And like you said, he was brilliant to watch. And now if you look back at, you know, anything, any sort of clips of him on YouTube, and just admire how good he was. And
yeah.
I'd agree with you there as well, saying he doesn't get the... I wouldn't even, I don't even know what word you use there.
Credit.
The credit that other players are getting. For me, you know, he's one of the all-time greats. Mm. So,
not to make us feel old here, do you remember the treble?
Man United's treble?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember it. I think I was seven at the, six or seven at the time. But I remember, well, parts of it.
Yeah.
Now when I look back, there's a lot of stuff that's happened. Whether it be in the semi-final or the finals that I wouldn't remember.
Yeah.
I said to you before, it surprised me how long it actually took you to get to the Premier League, Jeff. I was getting phone calls about you when I was at Derby from people connected with Wolves, people connected with Everton at that time.
Mm. Jeff, just remind the listeners and me, so what year were you at Derby? What
2011, I was there for 6 months, yeah.
You had just broken into the team, right?
Well, Jeff was a young boy come through, and again, he impressed me. So that was
right.
The phone calls I was getting, that's why it did surprise me. It did take so long before he actually did make the step up.
Yeah, was Coban helpful, Jeff? Or
I was an old man then. My back had gone, Jeff.
You played a good bit. I think your back went when
did me back, me back, me back, me back went on a trip to New York. We went to we back went
the
then,
didn't help.
And then we went to New York afterwards. Nigel Clough took us away on a trip, so he gave us a couple of nights out. And I got off the plane in New York, and it was kind of the end of my career. So you inadvertently, Jeff, helped finish my career, mate.
Yeah, great career it was though. But you know, I was just trying to make sure I was making squads, and I wasn't on much money then, so I wanted a parents' fees.
No, but you know what I say there about a lot of the clubs. You mentioned before there was certain interest within you. So, do you feel as though that having that time to development at Derby was more beneficial to you? That you've arrived in the Premier League at the right time. You said that you perhaps felt as though you could have gone a couple of years early, but you certainly look now like you're ready. The way that it's gone, first few months in the season, steady and shit. But now you look like you're really ready, and you're a Premier League footballer now.
Maybe staying at Derby, I've been lucky enough to. I think I played over 200 games with Derby. It definitely taught me a lot more about the game. You know, I've played under a few managers there and different styles. And I've had some really good times and some hard times where I was in and out of the team. And I suppose it's all, you know, about learning and improving. And who knows, maybe if I had gone 2-3 years ago, it might have been too early for me. I'll never know that now.
Mm-hmm. How have you found it though, Jeff, with with Sean Dyche. How have you found the adjustment to a new club, Sean Dyche, training day to day? How you play? Because we can all see the intensity that you play is it's high every game, and it's almost like it's almost relentless at times, isn't it? Because it's almost like first minute to the 90th minute, the tempo of the games that you play at Burnley exactly the same.
Yeah, we do work hard. We work hard every day. He doesn't want us to take a foot off the gas at all. And, you know, it's a credit to the lads here. Everyone gets on with whatever he asks. Nobody moans or sucks. And everyone puts, you know, 100% in every day. And I think it's shown when it comes to match that is everyone's ready, we're fit. We are working hard and we're playing the exact way we're training. And I think some teams are finding it hard when we play with that tempo for the full 90 minutes.
What's the move been like off the pitch? Like, did you find a house, or were you stuck in a hotel, or you staying with Ward or Brady, or what's that move been like?
No, it was all right. I was in a hotel. Well, obviously when I signed, I was away with Ireland, so yeah. I signed and then didn't get to meet my new teammates for 10 days or whatever it was. Then I was in a hotel for, I think it was 2.5 weeks or 3 weeks, and then I was back up with Ireland again. And then I was in a hotel again for 3 weeks, and then I was back with Ireland again.
So I
was in a lot of hotels for the first maybe 2 or 3 months. And then eventually I found a place to move into, which was brilliant. Living out of a hotel, it's good for the first week or so. But
yeah,
I think the novelty wore off then, and I was just dying to get into my own place and just to be able to relax and get used to the area a little bit more then.
So let's talk Ireland then. Some players go to big tournaments and they find there's a lot of pressure and it doesn't suit them. You seem to arrive at Euro 2016 last year and say, I am going to grab this by the balls from the first minute of the game against Sweden. Like, we were all there watching that game and you were just everything you'd want. Not afraid, getting shots on, running forward. I mean, it looked like you were absolutely loving that stage. I don't know what your memories are of that period.
Yeah. Before we left, obviously we had a game in Cork and I was terrible in that game.
Right.
I don't know why I was. I sat down with people close to me after that, just before we flew off, and they told me I was terrible as well. And you know, I took it on the chin because, you know, I get told when I play well, so I have to be told when I play bad.
Yeah.
I just had to sort of have a talk with them, and they were saying, basically, I can't play like that when I go over there. I knew I couldn't, and I told them, and maybe that's out of the system now, and I just told them what sort of goals I had of the tournament and how it's going to go for me. You know, luckily, I did change my performance.
Jeff, sorry, that Belarus game was just a kick in the ass then, do you think, for yourself personally?
Yeah, I think it was a bit of a wake-up call for me. You know, we were training for a couple of weeks and then I got to that game and I don't think any of us who played in that game can hold their hands up and say we've done well. So I think it was definitely a kick up the backside and a wake-up call for us.
Where were you on the pitch when Brady scores against Italy?
About 30 yards behind them because I didn't have the legs to get up there.
I'd say so. Can you even like verbalise what that moment's like, or what, like, did you run after him, or did you just fall to your knees because you're wrecked, or like, what? Just the most amazing moment.
Yeah, I remember going in and I ran over slowly to the celebrations and just joined in and it was unbelievable.
Yeah,
I don't know what I was thinking exactly. But then it was just, you know, we got back to into our own half and the atmosphere was unbelievable. I don't think we could hear each other talking, but we all knew we just had to see it through then.
Yeah. How quickly did you realise the enormity of that goal then and what it meant in the history of Irish football?
The main thing for us was just to win the game. You know, wasn't thinking about anything else really. So once the goal went in, it was all about seeing it through because, you know, we didn't want to go home at that stage.
Mm. Does it cross your mind, even just briefly, God, it's bloody Brady who's after scoring and I'm on the pitch as well, and it's just it's mental the journey the two of us have gone on together. Like, the odds of it happening, you know, any schoolboy team across Ireland, that two players would end up in that pitch from the same schoolboy team must be, you know, 2 or 3 million to 1, I'd say, at least. Like, does that cross your mind, how that special bond that the two you have, or am I being way too deep and philosophical here about the whole thing?
Maybe a little bit deeper than, you know, than what goes on inside my head there. Yeah. But, no, obviously, I was delighted. You know, you could see the celebrations after the game, just giving them a hug. I think Bo was cried for about half an hour to an hour after. It was an unbelievable feeling. I was delighted he got the goal, but would have took anybody scoring the goal to keep us in the competition.
Yeah.
Do you feel any extra importance now, Jeff, upon yourself after the Euros and what you accomplished there yourself from a personal point of view?
I suppose I don't think about that sort of stuff. It's, for me, I look forward to meeting up with the lads and, you know, getting in training with them, having a laugh off the pitch, off the training pitch, and get ready for the big game, because it is a big game. Been waiting a long time for it. I'm just excited. I just want to go out and play and hopefully perform as well as I know I can.
Something I wanted to ask you, and we won't take up too much more of your time. Something I wanted to ask you, and Kev, you can weigh in on it as well, is, you know, an Irish team at its worst would be accused of not getting on the ball and putting passes together and, you know, possession, and you know, we'd be accused of giving it away too much. And that's been a complaint with Irish teams for years and years. As a central midfield player, Jeff, do we on the outside understand sometimes how little space there is down there and how much pressure a team can be putting on you in midfield? And you're like, it's not just so easy that you can saunter over to the fullback and get the ball under no pressure. Like, sometimes we have to be a bit more pragmatic and go long and clip a few. Or, like, what's your experience like in midfield in a tight game, you know, against a team like Wales, when it's very easy to sit on the couch and say, oh, we should be passing more?
Whenever I've been injured, I've watched games. I've realised that it's a lot easier watching games on the telly than being involved. But I think everybody will say that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think at sometimes in matches you need to go long. Then it helps open up the game where you can get on the ball a little bit more. Especially again the game against Wales, I think it is going to be a high tempo. And there's going to be a lot of closing down, so I think that could be the case at the start.
Yeah.
But we won't know until we get onto the pitch and the match starts.
I'd say, Kev, that's something that you've experienced. Like, just clipping a few pushes the opposition back and makes a bit more space. That's what Jeff's talking about.
Wherever I've played, whether it's been at fullback, I've played a little bit in central midfield, out wide. Yeah, I think it's game know-how, game understanding, knowing full well what players around you are actually going to do, not necessarily being able to take balls in tight situations. You might have to go over your head. You might have to go and play second balls. There's various things that do happen when the game's progressing. But I look at the Serbia game, when we look at the start of the group and the criticism that the team took for that game, of course, we all know, you watch it back, it wasn't a great game to watch, but it was a superb result. And I think we overlook sometimes the results that the lads can actually get and they achieve without necessarily able to play well. That's a skill in itself.
Yeah, because, like, I'd say, Jeff, that Serbia game away, bad pitch, no atmosphere, you know, just kind of a dark, dreary night. Like, it's so much harder, I'd say, to play football in that environment as opposed to in the sunshine at the Euros.
Obviously, the game against Serbia was a lot different than we'd imagined. The pitch wasn't good at all. It was cutting up. It was bobbly. It was heavy, heavy on the legs. It was raining, like you said, no atmosphere.
And
we knew it would be hard. Serbia are a very good team.
Yeah.
They've got a lot of good players. And for us, after the game, we were delighted. You know, we went 1-0 up with them. We had 2-1 down. We were delighted to come back and get the point.
Yeah.
You don't want to lose a game like that. You know, it's a big game, especially away from home. And I think we've grew from that game.
Just a last question, another mad part of your story. So you mentioned there, you know, Roy Keane, you're a Man United fan. He's obviously an unbelievable midfielder, and now you get to work with him. You can literally ask him anything you want on the training ground about midfield play. Does he work one-on-one with you, or like with you and just the midfielders? Have you learnt things from him? Or, you know, maybe I could be overstating things. Like, that relationship with Keane, has that been a really special thing for you? And have you learned things?
Yeah, well, from the four squad I was involved in with Martin and Ryan, you know, the first game was, I think I played at Craven Cottage and we played Italy, and straight away, at half-time, Roy just gave me a bit of advice, and I carry that with me now in every game I play. And when he sees something in my game that he can help me with, he tells me, and then I try and put it right.
Yeah. What was the advice?
It was just something little. It was, I was used to playing in a free-flowing derby team where there was three in midfield, so for me, the onus was on me to get forward and link up with the striker whenever I can. And then when I played in that game, there was only two of us in the middle, and I was playing a little bit too far forward. Mm. He just told me, you know, play a little bit deeper, be the out ball for any winger or a fullback if they need to come back in. You should always be available, and I just tried to do that in the second half. And it worked for me. I felt like I had a very good game today.
Yeah, listen. Keep listening to him. He knows what he's talking about. Thanks so much for your time. We obviously wish you the best of luck against Wales. The whole country, I think, is giddy about this game, and it's a sellout, and it's going to be an unbelievable atmosphere. So the best of luck, and keep it going with Burnley.
Yeah, good luck, Jeff.
Cheers. Thanks very much, lad.
Off the ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.